It's not uncommon for voter turnout to be lower on primary day than on the general election day in November. But so much is at stake in Detroit's primary today. Voters will narrow the field in races for mayor and city council, and those will be the leaders working closely with emergency manager Kevin Orr during the city's historic bankruptcy and running the show after Orr leaves. So the need for competent, passionate elected officials is greater than ever. Yet turnout at the polls in Detroit is expected to be in the 15 to 17% range. We wanted to talk about what's behind that chronically low number. And could there be something at play besides disaffected residents? Joining us is Bridge Magazine staff writer Nancy Derringer. Hi, Nancy.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
Also, welcome back to Karen Dumas. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Good. Karen's the former chief of communications for Detroit Mayor Dave Bing, and she's a communications PR strategist. You know, we've spoken with both of you earlier this year looking at the low voter turnout. And Karen, I recall you wrote a piece in Bridge last spring essentially saying Detroiters are paying the price for their lack of diligence. Recap for us what you were saying with that piece.
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of like having a child that you don't take care of, and then you're upset when, you know, someone comes in and takes that child away from you for negligence. So I think in part, you know, Detroiters were maybe a little comfortable or passive in terms of voter engagement, elected official accountability, follow-up, follow-through. And it came to pass in terms of, you know, the appointment of an emergency manager or the situation here economically and even socially, it becomes so compromised that the state felt it necessary to step in.
And Nancy, you found something that could show something beyond voter apathy, and your piece in Bridge Magazine is offering another reason why voters seem scarce at Detroit polls.
That's right, and it's very simple. It's the high cost of auto insurance. The fact is that if you live in the city of Detroit, you will pay anywhere from hundreds to thousands of dollars more for the same insurance you would get on the other side of the city limits for a variety of reasons. But it is literally a economic issue for a lot of people who, you know, obviously need to have a car in Detroit but do live there. And so what they'll do is they'll take advantage of, you know, a relative who lives outside of the city, you know, and various other dodges to essentially keep their car registered outside of the city. And then if they register to vote in the city, you know, sooner or later your insurer will find out about that and you'll be hit for these, you know, outrageously high premiums.
So in essence, because of this motor voter, people are kind of looking and weighing it and saying, you know what, it's just not worth it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they're, you know, I know people who are in their 40s and 50s with very elderly parents who live outside the city that still use their parents' address for their car insurance and for that very reason. And it's not, you know, it's not a matter of a few dollars. It's a matter of sometimes paying double or even higher than that.
Nancy, can you give us an idea how you came to this conclusion and what kind of digging you did to react to?
Sure. We had a tip from a source that we use who's a data analyst. And he had actually had a client who was a politician who wondered if it would be worth his while to campaign door-to-door in the various high-rise buildings in the central city. And so what this guy did is he took his own address. He lived in one of those high-rises. And he ran it through what's called the qualified voter file, which is a public document kept by the state, which shows the address of every registered voter in the state. And he lives in a high rise with 116 units. He found 9 registered voters. Mm. One was, and he was one of them. And so we repeated that example in several other of the high density addresses in Detroit. And we didn't find anything that was quite that stark, but we did find in buildings like the Park Shelton and, you know, some of the ones down on the river where these new urban pioneers, you know, these young, engaged, educated people who are, you know, allegedly pouring into Detroit are you know, they live in these buildings and they're just not registering.
Karen, did this surprise you when you saw this piece of Nancy's?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I remember when I first came back from college and I was transferring my insurance from East Lansing back to Detroit, and there's a street both in Detroit that I lived on at the time, the same name in Grosse Pointe. And so the insurance agent said, oh, and your zip code is 482, you know, whatever, and he gave me all these wonderful. And I said, no, it's 48214. And he says, oh. And the difference in the price quote was just astronomical. So, you know, yeah, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I pay a tremendous amount of auto insurance. You know, I've had my vehicle stolen from my garage. So, yeah, I mean, I could see that. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
I wonder, is there really any kind of solution to this problem?
Well, I mean, we've been talking about insurance rate reform for the city of Detroit, you know, I dare say for decades now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost a way of life. You expect to, you know, to pay more and almost get less here now. So I'm not really sure where it's going. You know, we've had commissions, we've had commissioners, we've had all these things in place to help resolve that. I know there was a change in how you could report a missing vehicle because there were a lot of cars that were not stolen from the city of Detroit, but they were claimed to have been stolen from the city of Detroit. That didn't seem to, you know, make a difference either.
You know, when I talked to the representatives of the insurance industry, they were pretty unapologetic about it, and they have some depressing data to back up their, you know, their quotes. I mean, they said, I believe, can't remember if it's one third or one half of all the cars stolen in the state of Michigan are stolen in Wayne County. You know, the fact is that if you live in a densely populated city, you're more likely to get into an accident. They're not apologetic about this at all. I mean, they say this is dictated by economic reality.
And I guess what that does, though, is open up the prospect that this low turnout is not simply a function of apathetic residents.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Karen, that gives us something to kind of look at. And also, I wanted to ask you about a piece that actually our friend Nancy Kaffer put in the Detroit Free Press, pointing out that the voter turnout might not be as horrendous as it looks because the voter rolls have lots of names that shouldn't be there.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that there has been a lack of accountability on so many levels. So, you know, we're also expecting some challenges in terms of the names that are written or to be written on the ballot and, you know, the whole challenging of the process. So I do think that Detroit is at a point that, you know, there needs to be a reevaluation on so many levels. But the people that are doing the reevaluating and then the changes have to be qualified, committed, and capable of doing so. I mean, if we put people that are back in office or put them in office that are recycled politicians or people that get in on name recognition or out of sympathy, then we're going to end up the same place that we started. I mean, people, when Kevin Orr leaves, whatever this city may look like, for better or worse, it has to be left in capable hands. You know, I do have to say that, you know, I voted this morning and looking at the ballot, I mean, it was a disappointing options on there. I mean, there really weren't, you know, nothing overwhelmingly impressive to me.
Let me just ask, as you went to your precinct, what was the turnout like?
I think I was like number 60. So they said, you know, it was kind of steady. There were people there, but it was not like, you know, the presidential election or anything. There was no line. So, you know, it's yet to be seen. On one hand, you know, the circumstances may energize the voters and say, hey, you know, but then you've got situations like what happened with Prop 4. People say, you know, maybe our voice in the democratic process doesn't work anymore. So it's yet to be seen.
And in fact, that's really where I want to get the thoughts from both of you kind of to wrap up here. And I'll start with you, Nancy Derringer. What do you think is the key? Let's go back to the apathetic folks, the ones who never got around to registering or don't get themselves to the polls on any given election day. What do you think is the key to turning apathy into action?
Ooh, boy, that's a
$64,000
question. But, you know, I guess I have to fall back on education. You know, you know, I live in a suburb. I live in a pretty affluent area, and I'm just really amazed at how many people simply do not realize that their local elections are going to affect their daily lives far more than, you know, the big presidential election that you're willing to stand in line for. I mean, the people that you elect to things like school boards and city councils and so forth, I mean, these are policy-making positions with significant impact on your life. And I think, you know, I mean, maybe we just need big civics class or something. I don't know. I mean, I think we could certainly make voting easier. But, you know, just to get people, you know, out there and registered and caring and reading about this stuff, you know, they just, I guess they have to know what is at stake.
And Karen?
Well, I think people have to come to the realization that there is a connectivity between their vote and their quality of life. You know, Nancy said, you know, her area is pretty affluent. You know, here there are some economic challenges in the city, and that is the result of either, you know, undereducated or, you know, underemployable constituents here. And so, you know, they tend to have a different perspective you know, on life and their ability to contribute or, you know, influence the outcome. So I do think the civics class would be great and helpful. I think there needs to be more conversation about how government works. And, you know, people have to, you know, they are always upset about something, but they have to be enraged enough to be engaged.
Well, interesting conversations, as always, as we talk with Bridge Magazine writer Nancy Derringer and Karen Dumas. Always enjoy talking with both of you, and I know we'll be doing it again soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much. Have a great day.